Well, here we are again. Here's the illustrious Brent Roberts and the effervescent Aussie Durock, and we are at Christmas time in Vancouver, Canada, and it's one of those months that we do some reflecting, then we make predictions for ourselves and plans for the next year, and then a month later we forget all about them. This what is it we have in the Real Estate Action Group? We write down all of our goals for the year in an envelope in January.
Right.
And we just write it down. Just, you know, don't think about it. Just write it down and we glue the envelope together. And then the secretary keeps it for a year. So this upcoming meeting on January the 8th, I think it is, people will get what they wrote down a year ago. And it's always very interesting. I mean, every year, and I've been doing it since 2000, so for 20 years, and I may not be there, but the point is, we've been doing it a long time. And what people have done, they look at the thing, they say, you know what? Actually, I did buy that new BMW. Oh, I did, you know, do this. Oh, and I promise, I said to Ozzy, says, say I love you to your wife more often. I did do, you know, like the funny thing, we realized that goal setting, and particularly if it's intuitively and quickly and just forget about it, has a magic of working in ourselves.
Well, you're absolutely right, Ozzy. And one of the things I really liked about that exercise that you always did at REA, and we continue to do, is that, you know, you set your goals and sometimes you forget them, like you said. You know, you forgot that you wrote them down, and then you open up your envelope and you realize, oh my gosh, I forgot I had put that on there, but not only did I accomplish it, but I might have even exceeded that goal.
Because it was in my head, you know, so I keep attracting it, you know. So anyways, today we're not going to talk goal setting, but we will talk about Trudeau. Will he or will he not survive? We will talk about Trump. Will he put in the tariffs? And I have a very personal view on that. And then what is 2025 looking like? And maybe we should start out by saying, you tell us, what do the trenches look like right now in the market?
Well, you know, it's December, and December is generally a little bit of a slower market, although, you know, over the past 35 years, I've sold 8 houses on a Christmas morning. So, you know, people that are looking, you know, I mean, we're showing houses. We're still in the middle of negotiating. On Monday, we've got inspection on one property. We're in the middle of a negotiation on another property today. You know, so we're certainly not dead. People that are out there buying are certainly buying, and they're more serious, because if you aren't, you should be going Christmas shopping or putting the train together like you're going to be doing with the grandchildren today, yeah. You know, kids today, right?
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of cool. You know, it's more family related things, right? Yeah. And if you're out there shopping and stuff like that, you know, for a house, you're serious. Now, it's, you know, the market's certainly picked up a little bit more. It's more of a balanced market a little bit, you know, considering it's been a buyer's market for the full year, probably. And but there's still negotiations to be done. You know, the sellers are still not in the driver's seat. You know, we're still having to negotiate. People that are asking too much money are still sitting there. There are, in some categories, only 1 out of 20 houses selling. So, you know, in that category, in some categories, it's definitely a buyer's market. And then in some prices, price ranges, in the lower price ranges, it's definitely a seller's market.
Yeah, still there. Well, I was just talking recently, and we did a video with Kyle Green from Green Mortgage, and he was telling me this December is going to be the best month of the year for him. So, and he says a lot of developers are rushing to close their deals, you know, because, and they want to all close them. He says they want their mortgage like tomorrow, everybody on the 20th. They want to do it before the holidays. What we forget is the developer, every month it might cost them $100,000 by not closing or waiting a month. So they want to close as soon as possible, and he's running around getting all these mortgages done. But
well,
I think it needs more negotiation, I think, right now, right? I mean, it's not just making an offer and then you get an acceptance and you go off to the pub. No, you have to go back and forth and extensions, and maybe people have to co-sign or whatever.
Well, and you're absolutely right, you know, and that's one of the things right now is that we're going back to the bank more often. You know, we're having to try to renegotiate or, you know, add another person's name to the title because they didn't qualify by themselves. The banks are very tough right now, especially for the first time buyer out there. You know, the investors, you know, depending on their category and where they sit and what they've structured, you know, that's a different kettle of fish. But for the first time buyer, you know, we're finding some resistance for sure. You know, the banks' rates have gone down, but they're certainly not giving money away freely.
Well, the thing is, on a first-time buyer now, our government said that since last this December 15, you can change the bank if your mortgage comes due, and you don't have to requalify for the stress test. And we forget how tough the stress test is. I mean, if I get a 4.5% mortgage right now, it means I'm paying six, or I have to qualify for 6.5. So it's quite a change.
Well, exactly, especially if you qualified for a 2.5% rate 5 years ago, or a 1.89% rate, and now the payments are up, and your expenses are up, and the cost of your mortgage is up $600-$700 a month, and your job hasn't increased that much. It's much better that you don't have to do that, or else we'd have much more difficulty. We have millions of mortgages coming due in the new year, and there's some pressure on people for sure.
Well, and that's why, particularly on the investment investor, real estate investor, they have to get their ducks in a row. And certainly, I've been preaching, like in my, and I'm a partner in a real estate company, and we have about 50 deals coming due in a development in May, and we're after them right now. And they're saying, get your ducks in a row. You'll be amazed when you haven't been at a mortgage broker for a while or a bank, what they all want from you. They not only do they want to know how many children you have, illegitimate or legal children. They want to know everything about you that you hadn't thought about it. Lease contracts and rental agreements, and get ready. And then yes, it's usually the best rates are in the last 4 months, but get it now, and you can rather readjust it every month. But get it done. Don't wait. There's another thing that I think particular people are looking at assignments now. I'm not going to get myself approved because I'm going to assign. Well, what if you don't? And then at the last minute, you're running around trying to get financing. So get it done now. But
Very good advice. Very good advice because, people are scrambling at the last minute. They're either finding out that, okay, I didn't realize, but I need an extra $50,000 as a down payment because a lot of these properties, that they put their offers in. I mean, the developers are trying to sell the last units in the complex and they've discounted the prices quite substantially. And all of a sudden, this is a bad mistake on a developer's point of view because now people are trying to qualify and the appraisers are saying, this isn't worth that much money, so they're having to come up with substantially more down payment than they expected.
Yeah, I must say, I haven't really seen it on the developers we're dealing with because it's a foolish thing to do. You're going to just make a lot of people unhappy. The
Right.
big thing, though, isn't really the local market just now, although real estate in the end is always local. All values are local. We can talk about the market in Canada. It doesn't mean much in my market in Surrey, right? It's what is it in Surrey is important. But we do have some big things hanging overhead. There is Mr. Trudeau in trouble this week.
Right, sure is, isn't he? I mean, he's usually put his foot in his mouth somewhere along the line. Sometimes it's a little bit bigger, sometimes a little smaller. Usually, I don't think it's a good idea if you're going to do something is to give them so much headway or leeway that they can go and do what Chrystia Freeland just did. She really upended the mark the politics this week.
Well, but I mean, it's so strange. You mean to say she wasn't part of the problem? They had their $40 billion sort of limit, then she wouldn't want to say what they'd extended to, and then at $62 billion, give me. I mean, imagine go to the bank and saying, "Well, I thought we were gonna, be at about 40,000, but now it's 62,000. They'll throw you out of the office. They won't even talk to you." And I mean, so it's ludicrous. But we thought certainly the wisdom was that Trudeau would survive only because with of the NDP, and the NDP enjoys being in government. They wouldn't be as involved as they have been if they weren't in the minority and actually keeping the Liberals in power. But the story was they will keep him in power because the leader has a pension coming due, and if he doesn't stay in the office till next October, he might lose it. But maybe there's a change there.
Well, here's the thing, so first of all, his pension is obviously important to him. He says Trudeau should resign. Trudeau is a threat to the democracy and everything else. He said all these things over the years, but I'm still going to keep voting for him. I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous what he's done. Excuse me. So this term, this time he's kind of up against the wall, isn't he? But his
Well, it came out last night and tweeted that they will no longer support him. Now, I don't know. Sometimes when you get those late night tweets, might be some idiot. But I think that he may have said we will no longer support him. And
Well, and I
when
agree with
Parliament came back, we would have an election coming up.
yeah, and I agree with that. I thought his pension was coming up in February. So, if it naturally comes up and they call it in January, that means the election could, be in effect in January 27th, the first time. So the reality of it is that he'll be safe for his pension anyway. So I think it's a safe bet on his part
I
to be
thought
able
it. I thought you had to wait till October. The point is, we're having a big change happening, and
to.
the big question I always get: oh, conservatives get in, will they cancel the increase in the capital gains tax? I have never seen any government, as much as I am supporting them, I have never seen a government actually reverse a previous government tax increases, because they like the idea of taxes. But the thing is, we need a fresh air, and I think we're gonna
absolutely. One of the things is, Ozzy, is that so far it hasn't been put into government yet, that increase. So the chances are, and if his whole mandate is axe the tax, he better axe this tax. And the reality of it is that I believe, it would be very poor for him to allow that to continue.
Well, yeah, no, I mean, the carbon tax, clearly, that's the official platform. But I was thinking more of the capital gains tax increase to 66%
Right, and I'm
to
saying
your income, So, but I'm not sure that they're going to change it. But who knows, right? But we will be in for change and a little more certainty. And I think that's, as investors and homeowners and everybody, we all want a little more certainty, in our lives, so.
But I agree with you. Pierre said that he would definitely was against that increase in the capital gains tax. However, it's just like our liberals when we were out here, and they didn't like the fact that we put property purchase tax on the properties, and the NDP had done it. And of course, when the liberals came in, they said, "Well, we're addicted to that, so we're not going to." So
we didn't do it. They can't point fingers. They did it, and we are the good guys, right? Well, give me a break, right? In the end, it's always you and I pay more. That's the only thing that matters. I did a little show with Michael Campbell, I guess a couple of months ago, and we just looked at Alberta and BC. It is mind-boggling. I don't want to go to all the details, but the thing is, a BC government official would say, "Well, Alberta has gas taxes and we have gas taxes." Yeah, but ours is 28% and theirs is 9, right? I mean, there's somewhat of a difference, right? And there's hardly any taxes being paid compared to what we pay in BC.
There's an emergency going on in Halifax area, and they've just raised their prices of gas, and they're shooting up, and everybody's complaining. And their gas prices are $1.54, and here we are at $1.72. Last night it was $1.73.9, and here they're concerned about, so our taxes out here are outrageous.
And I'm paying $2.10, so it's even worse.
Exactly.
But having had that beef, one of the big things that we get hammered by the main media every single day, the word tariffs, tariffs this and tariffs that. Excuse me.
Yeah, sorry to hear that.
I should put a tariff on my coughing. Okay, so let's take a quick look at.
You're right about the tariffs, right? I mean, you were hearing more and more of this with Trump, and but you've got here we go.
Can you see that?
Yes.
Okay, that's good.
You can see all the sidebars as well there.
Okay, let me see here. Let me just get this over here. Hold that
That's
there.
awesome.
Slideshow going. I think just to talk about.
Now it's your slideshow is not the full screen. You still got the sidebars on here.
Okay.
There you go.
So it's full screen and the two of us there, right?
Absolutely.
Okay, so well, we're talking about the United States, a brief overview. When I talk about Trump saying 24%, you and I are in negotiations every darn day.
Right.
And do we ever start out by saying what we really want? No. I mean, if I want the 10% tariffs, do I say, okay, 10% tariffs, and that's what it's going to be? No, I say I want 24% tariffs. In fact, Michael Campbell on Money Talks this week talks about the fact that he has a guest who talks about the fact that in the first term, any tariffs that Trump mentioned going in never came about. They were very far and few before. So it's a lot of, boiling, what is it, water in a teacup or.
Yeah, a lot of posturing.
A lot of posturing. What we need to realize is that if I go to you, Brent, and I'm an owner, and I want $2 million for this house, you really say to yourself, God, it shouldn't be listed at $1.9 million, but you take it at 2 million. My 2 million is like a tariff, 24%. I want 2 million. The buyer comes in and says, that's crazy, you know, I'm going to offer $1.8 million. And then your job is to maybe bring them together at $1.9 million. And that is what I think is going to happen. I mean, think about it. When you look at the United States right now, this just is an old slide, so maybe some of those countries have mixed, but it's a super strong economy. I mean, 330 million people in the United States. It's a huge country. Look at the economy of France fits into California, Canada, Texas, Hungary, Thailand. All of these countries make up this thing. But for our interest is that, look at this. These are all of the provinces in Canada that are dealing with the states in the United States. We are married together. There's no way that Trump can say, okay, 24%. Look, we have a car industry where the parts are made in Ontario and shipped to the United States, and then other parts are made in Alabama, wherever, and shipped to Canada. There isn't a single car built in Canada from scratch to finish, all Canadian or all United States. Parts come from Mexico. What's he going to say? We're going to put tariffs on it? He's much more likely to say, well, let's leave that one out.
Right.
Look at the agreement that we made, which is the United States-Mexico-Canada agreement. People think there's a NAFTA agreement. That was superseded in 2020 under Trump. He signed this.
Yes.
And that agreement was really very, very strong against Canada because we were charging twice as many tariffs on milk, for instance. That's why you go to Washington, a liter of milk is half the price than it was in Canada. And so now the U.S. dairy farmers had a tariff-free access to 3.6% of Canada's dairy market. When you
right.
look at the deal we made, it was a fabulous deal. They only have access to 3.6% of the market. The rest of the market, they have to compete with the locals. You know, so the thing is, under the automobile manufacturing, the USMCA, which is replaced the NAFTA agreement, increases the rules of origin requirement for automobiles. So if you have a higher percentage of the vehicle's components that have to be produced within North America, that is a very good tariff, a very good agreement among three countries. So at least we kept on all the others out and made sure where we can't just go and get the tires from somebody else, right? So that, to me, is a logical thing. We sat around the table and intellectual property rights and digital trades and all that, we did that. Now, the key to me is, I might have mixed up my chest. There we go.
Still good till 2026 as well.
That's the thing. The upcoming review is in July 2026. So what are we talking about? You know, Canada has expressed concerns about Chinese companies potentially using Mexico as a conduit for bypass tariffs. That's a Reuters story just recently. There's the dispute about modified corn was fought with Mexico and won by Canada. So when you look at that, what are we talking about? We're talking about a negotiation of a president who is fed up with a lot of the world. I mean, look at it. He said in 2018 to the Germans, to German reporters, if you guys, any country that gets all of its energy resources from another country should have their head examined, right? And well, there he was right. I mean, Germany is a basket case now in reopening nuclear plants, coal plants, you know, all of the goody-goody, good shoes, bad emissions kind of a thing. We need to have heat, right? So anyways, the point is, I'm thinking tariffs, schmerifs. Maybe it's going to zap the Chinese higher. Remember, originally Chinese imports, the tariffs were 12% and the U.S. was 2.5%. And he told the Chinese in 2020 or 2019 that if there had to be some, they had to come down, we had to go up. And that's what you do. When he got in, he kicked in Iran out of the nuclear agreement, and they vilified him about it. But he said, no, they're not keeping up to the agreement. We can't get the inspection. So the point is, froze all their accounts. The Houthis, what do you do with them? Threatened them and said, and you are a terrorist organization. And
yeah.
They are, right? I mean, he didn't. So he says what he believes, and you might not like what he does. And I think sometimes he says things that, Jesus, I raise my eyebrows to the back of my head. But the point is, look at the actions. What did
yeah.
he do? He wanted to build a wall. And he pointed out that the wall in Germany had worked. The wall in Israel is still working. That he wanted to have, you know, all of the things. He's bombastic, he's loud, But so for Canadians that worry about the tariffs, don't worry about it. They need us as much. We're producing 60% of the US oil, of the US oil fields in some states. And I remember the Keystone Pipeline. He wanted it.
He
Biden
wanted.
came in, and the second day he canceled it.
Yeah.
That's
The
really
other
wrong.
thing is that, he's really getting attention to what he wanted to get attention to. And that's, hey, we've got a border issue. We're letting people in. And I know our country is not letting in as many people into their country, but, they're going to the weakest. I mean, we've got an issue with drugs and bad actors coming into the country, and he wants to stop it. And we should be doing that too. We've got too much of a lackadaisical thing with crime. They're letting people out on the streets for, people that have been doing bad things. And I mean, they're out on the streets in 5 years for
And
murder.
slowly, which I did in my The Revenge of the Little Man story, that the average person said, enough, it's just ridiculous. I was at a police town hall meeting a couple of months ago, and the people were saying, they're shooting up in my doorway, and people don't come into my business, and people that are in the business already are too scared to go out, even though they don't do anything ostensibly bad, but just to seeing them doing that, it's just frightening to them. And of course, people running in with knives and what. I mean, and we let it all go by. And so somebody says, well, the worst thing is you let them in three or four times. The police chief or the assistant chief or the speaker said, no, we have several people that have gone 200 times in and out of the court system. Well, I don't care. Is it policy? Is it the government? I don't care who it is. The average person says, we need to get this thing fixed.
There used to be an article in the newspaper when we had newspapers, and I remember reading it, and it said the first six cases that you get charged, you're in trouble. But between six and something like 110, you're okay. And then they get serious on you again. And this was years ago. I mean, this open door policy. I mean, if one of my customers, he runs a rehabilitation center for men, and he does a great job. He's never lost a guy. And but he says, you go to Campbell River. And outside the hospital, there's a dispensary for free crack pipes. I mean, something's wrong. We have a problem with our healthcare system, and we're giving away free drug.
Yeah, and everybody has an excuse. The police says we can't do anything because it's policy, right? And we and the court system says, look, we got 200 cases, and if 20 of them are just somebody stealing below $1,000, we let them out, right? If there is either not enough issues, not enough people, not enough screaming. I had a speaker who had from Simon Fraser at the Downtown Van Association. And you made this incredible statement that every day 300 mega drug users in Main Street and Hastings are spending $1.5 million a day just to support them. Anyways, where did we go with our forecast? What we should do is dust off all the things that annoy us and talk about what we see ahead next year. So what's 2025 going to look like?
Well, I think 2025 is going to be a much more active year. The interest rates are continuing to drop. They're talking about not a huge drop now. They've done their big jumbo drops now. They've done five drops in a row. Maybe we'll see a little quarter drop in January or February. So I think that'll be stabilized in that respect. I think the market will get a little bit more active. We need stability in our government for sure. And we need to figure out all of these BC policies. I think it was the NDP, a couple of, I think almost 2 years ago, they said they're going to streamline real estate development out here. Well, they're still streamlining it, I guess. And then the Canadian federal government's got all these policies coming into play. We'll see what plays out because I'm sure this government won't be the same government we've got today as we'll have next year. So we'll have to see what the policies go and what kind of implementation and government. I call it government interference, but maybe it's called government incentivization or something like that. Because local governments and federal governments have been penalizing people by raising interest rates and putting tax upon tax upon tax. You and Michael Campbell talk about it regularly. The taxation of the people is running people out of business. So you need to see some more development and stuff like that. So I really believe we're going to have more active. We're going to have a better market than we did in 2024. And 2023, we'll see more sales. I know the Royal LePage study says we'll be up 6%, but we've seen a lot of those corrected over the years. You know, and like you say, markets are local, aren't they? So you might have a 6% increase here, but you might have a 4% decrease in other areas, you know.
Well, and
And
that's why, you know, we need, you know, and certainly we keep telling our people, you need a local mortgage broker, you need a local real estate agent, and we need the professionals, you know, not somebody, and we want somebody that practices their profession, not practices on you, right? So you have to make sure that you ask the right questions. Well, in terms of, you know, we have also get a lot of questions now about the United States. Looks like inflation is going higher. Looks like maybe the interest rates are now not going to be, certainly not going to be 4 times increased, maybe only 2 times. And Mr. Powell just hinted at it, and the stock market took a serious kicking.
right.
And you and I talked about it. I think that we're still going to see, go a ways down in the stock market because Mr. Warren Buffett and Michael Burry and some of the, I mean, Amazon, Bezos, they're all selling like crazy their stocks and have been for a number of months and going into cash. I mean, Mr.
Right.
Buffett apparently has $330 billion in cash, 330 billion in cash. Now, why? What do these guys know or fear that you and I are not, you know, access to?
Well, you've been telling people to be into cash and, you know, for quite some time now. Not that you've been telling people to get out of real estate, but you've definitely been telling them to be more cash. And I think that's what Buffett's doing and people like that. So they're probably watching your podcast and making decisions based
Well,
on
I
that.
always felt that, you know, the older you are, the more, you know, if you're over 75, you should have half your money in cash. I really feel that because it's so sad to sometimes see older people speculating and then losing it. But the final thoughts, I want to just go back to the slideshow and briefly give me sort of my 5 cents worth of opinion on where we're going to go. Now, can you see all that?
I see Zoom. It says Zoom in the background.
Okay, so you don't see the slide?
No.
Okay, let's me just stop this and
Not
then find
you.
it.
Are you full?
So now we're going to do it again. Microsoft. Can you see it now?
It's doing now. We can see it, yes. And it's still got the sidebars, but we can see it.
Okay, so let's do this. So if you can see that,
Perfect. That's
I
perfect.
just this slide, I just say it briefly in terms of inflation. In my book, Forget About Location, Location in 1998, I felt that if we kept on printing money the way we did for the 50 years leading, 35 years leading up to 1998, we went from 13,500 to 278,000. I thought if we progress that forward by 2032, every house in Vancouver will be worth $5 million. And people thought I was, you know, what is he smoking? Is he nuts? And well, the West Side was 4.4 million, and it's gone higher than that already. Never mind, you know, getting closer. The average price is now well over 2 million, 2.2 million, somewhere in there. So you say, okay, in every book I followed that up, whether that was the Real Estate in Canada book in 2010 or 2012, or everything that we put together, and you, of course, are both in Real Estate Action and Real Estate Action 2.0, you have your own forecast in there. And we made that point. And my argument about people saying, well, real estate is going to go down or it's going to crash, is that according to Milton Friedman, who is sort of my forecasting guru, who said that inflation is primarily a monetary phenomenon. Well, we are in the mother of all monetary phenomena now. Worldwide, we are printing money. We owe money to the world like 330 trillion. They'll never pay it back. Never, ever. The only way to pay it back is through hard deflation or debasement of the currency. And what we're seeing right now, and I've been writing that for 5 years, stay in the US dollar. I mean, the US dollar, I mean, not if you're an investor, you have to take a look at what point you have your US dollars and put them into Canadian. Right now, at 69 cents,
Yeah,
you're getting
your
a
advice is
huge.
perfect.
Yeah,
Thank
you
you.
get a million and a half for your million, and then you get maybe 5% interest on that extra. Anyway, the point is, you know, when you take a look at that, what I'm talking about in inflation is that we have an inflation in hard assets, real estate, gold, things of real value that never stops. It is directly related to financial wherewithal. And the thing is, the more higher the US interest rates go, like a 10-year term now went over 4.5% again, The more money it will attract. If you're a pension fund manager in Belgium and you have $1 billion, where are you going to go? Into the euro? You want to go to the Swiss franc, which has been going all over the place. You want to go to the renminbi? No, you go to the US dollar. And so the point is that the hard assets that are going to inflating in the United States, in my view, in Canada, still going to be real estate. But there is people saying, yeah, but Aussie, my commodity's going down, copper is going down, all of the, and that's, yes. If the Chinese buy less of our natural resources and the Canadian and the Germans buy fewer of our everything that is commodity related, the oil and whatever, we could actually have a deflation in the commodity sectors, which is an economic event, has nothing to do with the fact that we're printing oodles of money, which then competes with anything of real value, which goes up. So hard asset inflation will continue. Yeah, in between, we had actually years from 2014 to 2016 where we had real estate assets go up and commodity assets go down at the same time. So when people get confused, ask them, what kind of inflation are you talking about? Are you talking about core inflation or, you know, all of the kind of inflation names they have? The fact is, in my view, real estate is still going to benefit unless we all go to hell in a handbasket. But we will muddle through, but I don't think in 2025. We're going to go more like sideways, hopefully do some bottom building, get some certainty and some clarity. But the outcome in my mind will still be hard asset. This slide, like I said, has showed again. It hasn't changed. We've shown it at every one of our events, and every one of our events, people said, well, Aussie, it's $1 million. You think it's really going to go higher? Well, yeah. Well, it's $1.5 million. Aussie, will it go higher? Yeah. But look, our federal government now allows mortgages to be increased as far from 1 million to 1.5 million. Why do you think they did that? It's because the hard asset price inflation is already there, right? So that's why they're making it possible that you can get a mortgage at these events. So the point is, in my view, inflation will be the eventual outcome. But we are in difficult times, and I would urge certainly everybody to be very cautious in what they buy, get quality advice. Quality, I mean, not every accountant is a real estate accountant. Not every lawyer is a real estate lawyer. And we have some lawyers that do nothing else but conveyancing on the channel. Take a look at them and see how they see the what you should guard yourself.
Good advice. You know, it's interesting, and I appreciate your insights because I agree with you. We're in some uncertain times, and we're going to see, you know, how this plays out, both with the government in the States, what they're going to be doing, and what we're doing here with our new government. And we're going to see some changes, and we're going to see how they kind of hopefully lower our taxes and make things a little bit better in Canadians. I know you're laughing. Okay.
I thought lower taxes, that's an oxymoron. I mean,
Could you imagine one last thing that you were saying about our debt? Could you imagine overshooting your budget by over 50%? And that was over a budget that you predicted that was so outrageous at the time.
Oh,
really? Yeah. It was outrageous. And they only set that in the spring. So hang on, you went from the spring till December and you just realized that now you're 50% over an outrageous budget? Oh my gosh, I'm glad they're not in charge of my finances at home.
Okay, last thing quickly. What is the best priced condo right now in Surrey?
Well, the cheapest right now that we've seen here is $288,000 for a 542 square foot condo. You can rent it out, you know, as you can nowadays. It's actually a good building and it has some upside for future development because it's an older unit, an older building. You know, so some really good opportunities, actually.
Yeah, do you have a cheapest house, too?
There's actually a few houses here, for example, in Surrey, under 900,000. There's only four of them, but, you know, there's some pretty good deals. And there's a house that's really decent with a suite for $1 million.
Well, so there you are. You know, and I see that there's also some assignments in the market that good developments. Some of the assignments, of course, you have to close fairly quickly, but there are deals out there. So what we want to leave everybody with, have a very Merry Christmas, have a good holiday, get rested well, and come back with clarity and don't lose faith. We live in the best country in the world. The whole world is wanting to come here and we are already here. So let's enjoy 2025.
Let's enjoy it. Merry Christmas and enjoy our families. Thank you, Ozzy. Merry Christmas.
You too. Merry Christmas.
Thank you.